try this Frankensnacker? Is that how you say it, Jason?
I don't. That sounds
Franken,
like
Franz. Franzenkiner.
Oh no, Franziskiner, the guy with the monk on the lid.
Yeah, Franzenkiner. Yeah. I got a Dunkel.
The Travis Monk beer.
I have some of those.
No, not a Travis Monk.
Say, I like that stuff.
Oh yeah, someone highly recommended the Dunkel, so I decided to get that.
Yeah, I have some of those in my fridge right now. They're actually pretty good.
Franziskiner Dunkel's pretty good.
It has to be with that long of a name.
Hold up, Corbin, you got some? Oh, shit.
I don't stay in business for that long with that long of a name and not be good.
At some point in the between us starting this podcast and us podcasting right now, I stopped drinking Bud Light Lime and started like branching off into all kinds of beer.
Praise the Lord. Amen.
I am actually like the expert in terms of like my group of people and family in Oklahoma. And all I know about beer is how much I don't know.
There is a God. That's all I have to say. That is the start of the podcast.
What, there is a God?
There is a God. Corbin said he no longer drinks Bud Light Lime.
Well, he no longer exclusively drinks Bud Light Lime.
Oh, I missed that keyword. Did you say that, Corbin?
I did not say that. I would probably still drink it if the occasion arose, but I've got real into, you know, real beer.
Okay, so when's the last time you actually drank a Bud Light Lime?
It's like, that's not a fair question. I just happened to slip up last week and drank.
No, I actually Corbin, and I have a problem. I'm 6 months Bud Light Lime sober.
I actually thought about getting one at the concert last week, but I didn't. I drank Shock Top instead. So it's probably been 4 or 5 plus months.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah. I've even started drinking IPAs, which at first I hated. So.
Breaking news. Hell just froze over.
Corbin the Hustler drinking grown-up beer.
Next thing I know, you're going to eat free-range chicken.
I mean, I eat a lot of chicken. If it happens to come from a free range, I'll eat it from there, too.
I
don't give a fuck where my chicken comes from.
Free range, close range, shooting range, I don't care, man. Don't give a fuck.
It's all chicken.
It's all chicken to me, man, tell you what.
Can you make that sound smart, Jason, please?
Tell you what, man, the difference between a regular chicken and a free-range chicken is three things, man. There's no GMOs in the food they get, they don't get any supplemental antibiotics, and they are allowed to wander outside their cage unrestricted for 7 hours a day.
You didn't have enough twang in there. That wasn't as funny as it could have been.
I'm
trying not to alienate quite half the listeners. Maybe 40%
the thing
time.
Is, the thing is, whenever Jason does this, you guys are making fun of me, and I want to defend myself and defend, you know, the area I'm in, but no, sometimes it's pretty accurate. Like, not in Oklahoma City where I live, you know, because it's a real city, but, you know, you drive an hour, you hit the country, and then it becomes very accurate.
I feel for you, Corbin. It'll be all right. One day you'll change.
People from rural Oklahoma is like making fun of the Amish, though. They're not going to get upset unless someone tells them.
You might step up to that job.
I don't plan on telling my family that you're talking about this, like this about them, so.
You don't play this blaring in your pickup truck.
He doesn't even listen to this podcast.
Ever. I listened to the one that I wasn't on. No, I didn't.
You did listen to one.
I listened to one a while back when Jason was mean to people at the beginning, I think it was.
You're going to have to be a little bit more specific.
You missed the one episode that had the most Eevee for you.
I know,
possible.
And I did that on purpose. I picked up on that, and I figured it would be more fun and better casting for you guys if I did not do it.
You're actually completely wrong. It would have been better casting if you would have caught up on that.
Yeah, we were hoping you were just going to like shut us down.
Well, and like you guys threw it out there. I feel like you would have been cheating it because like you made it so clear that I just needed to go listen to it. Like.
Yeah, we were literally just trying to get you to listen to an episode of our podcast, Corbin.
You were throwing me such a softball that I couldn't even.
No, there was
like...
no ulterior motives. We literally just wanted you to listen to an episode of our podcast.
We just wanted you to support us because we thought that we were friends.
See, we actually had a plan last week. We would have had a special guest that didn't show up, and then we were like, oh, you know what? We'll just do the episode without Corbin and tell him that the special guest showed up and then see if he ever finds out that it happened.
No, you know what would happen is that I would go on Twitter and thank the special guest for showing up on the podcast.
Oh, no, that would have been perfect because the other person would have felt so bad. Oh, we should have done it. We got blown out.
No, we didn't want that to happen. That was something I brought up. I'm like, until Corbin goes on Twitter and's like, thanks for joining us.
No, we wanted it to happen, and then you guys
that
ruined it.
So passive aggressive.
That's exactly what I would have done.
You would have. No, when you guys ruined it, you guys went on Twitter and said, oh, yeah, the guest didn't show up. I forgot what you guys did. One of you guys blew the cover.
Somebody texted me and said, Corbin, get home. We can podcast.
Yeah. You guys told him, come on the podcast. We could have had it already. That would have been the best troll. Oh, man.
I would have had no clue.
None. We would have been like, hey, because our fans, the people, the listeners, they didn't give up the first story. Nobody, we told you to listen to that episode, and
that's
we're trying
true.
To hint.
That's, yeah, nobody told me about that.
None of the fans, they kept their mouth shut. They didn't snitch. So they would have kept this one, too. They would have not let you know that the guest never showed up. It would have been the best.
And now you know where our listeners' loyalties lie, Corbin.
Well, that's good, because if our listeners knew how Marcel feels about snitches, they would have been real scared to tell me.
Hey, I'm just saying, people that happen to, if they're in a certain part of the game and then they play by different rules, things happen to them.
We're in a whole different game than Magic the Gathering right now.
Wow. Another game. They just took a dark turn.
Yeah. This is a game none of us want to play.
You hit the nail on the head. Snitches get stabbed in the lungs.
Oh, speaking of games, Marcel, how's that hashtag of yours coming along?
Oh, I got to give a shout out to Brother Ryan. He started Things That Marcel Says, and
that sounds awesome.
It is pretty good. He said another notch in the belt. Oh, wait, another belt in the notch.
Another belt in the notch.
See, I got it right that time. Yeah. And what was the other one? Hold on, I got to look this up.
That would just be the best Twitter account ever. Is that what we're talking about? Did somebody make a Twitter?
No, it is. Did a hashtag. So
there was a Twitter account. It could have gold for forever. One episode would give it weeks of content.
I think the hashtag. See, the problem with parody accounts is that people get bored and they stop them.
Yeah, it's true.
A hashtag, you could just have one of those days. Like, I'm just going to throw this on a hashtag, and it's there for, like, ever. Because there's some other...
I found it. I found the hashtag. It's Things Marcel Would Say.
Oh, okay.
Some good ones. If It Fits the Shoe. But he actually did say that, so... Hit the Nail on the Hammer.
A Disguise and a Blessing?
Yeah, that was mine. I said A Disguise and a Blessing.
So, hey, whoever has the most hilarious one of these hashtags, I'll randomly read one on a podcast. And this next week, if you got the best one, I will send you a mystery surprise gift. I don't know what it is yet, but you'll like it. So get on that.
It's hashtag. Needle pointers and snitches get stitches.
we have an unfair advantage because that hour before and after the cast with Marcel, you get so many content, so many things for that hashtag.
It's true.
Yeah, like, it's funny to make them up, but it's funnier when he's actually said it.
I'm throwing my name into this hashtag ring right now with Targamoif.
Well, hey, you got to put it on the Twitter. It's not a real hashtag till you see it. So
speaking of Twitter, I have a new rule.
Hashtag price check.
Anybody that sends me a tweet that says price check and then the name of a card, like, I'm just going to block you. I'm just going to look shit like that up on Google. Why I'm good at MTG Finance has nothing to do with my ability to look up card prices. So if that's why you're following me on Twitter, so I will look up stuff, you know, that you could easily Google yourself, I don't think I need you in my life.
But wait a minute.
So and that brings us. And that brings us to our Finance 101 for the week, which is how to find the card prices that you're looking for. So, here's what we're going to do. Ladies and gentlemen, TCG Player is the ideal source for any of your normal, English, non-crazy cards. If you are looking for anything a little more complicated, perhaps some foreign cards, some, like, you know, off-the-wall foils that maybe TCG Player doesn't have around, you're like, where would I find that? Well, eBay, that's a pretty good source. So that would be my second choice there. Does anyone else want to add to this conversation?
Your local game store might give you some, yeah, some kind of idea.
In these people's defenses, they did not know they were committing a faux pas, most likely. And what I was mostly being asked about was the new promo Ugin, where you can't just type that into TCG Player. Now,
but you
what
know
I
where
would
you
have done
type that into is eBay.
Exactly. What I would have done if I were inclined to do that sort of legwork for you, as a thank you for following me on Twitter, I guess. I don't know. If I were inclined, I would have typed it into eBay, because eBay is the most current market price. That's what they're going for, because that is the only place they can be sold at that time. So that's where they're being sold, and that eBay auctions are what are dictating the market price.
Those
so
are
eBay
all
is your
good.
Best bet in those situations.
But those are all good suggestions, but what if we just ask Jason on Twitter instead?
Yeah, see, you're doing it a lot.
You don't think I'll block you, Corbin?
Find out. Let's do it. Hold up. Jason, what is the price of the commons and the alternate Ugin prize packs?
Are they different? I don't even know. See, why are you asking me?
Oh, see? They're actually
pretty
insane.
While we're on the
subject,
though, let's talk about that.
Yeah, so I looked this up. Cause I went to TCG Player this morning, then I looked at these prices, and my jaw dropped because I just handed away all these cards that all of a sudden I had. I know which one I had. I had the Ugin, the Ugin's Construct.
That card's sweet in control.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty. Yeah, it's actually pretty good in control, but it's 450 TCG mid right now. I mean, I gave it to a new player, so I don't feel so bad because, you know, it was like her first FNM or pre-release or anything like that. She always only played casual, so I don't feel bad giving that. But it's insane to see a lot of these cards, like the prices on the TCG mid. Here, I'll send you the tweet.
Yeah, those cards are a reality shift.
So how do you feel about this? We talked about it last week, you know, that you guys don't really care about this. But what do you feel now that you're seeing a reality shift that's going for damn near $20?
I think like all those card prices are going to calm down a little bit. Everyone's freaking out about the Ugin packs. The cards that are good, like the reality shift, will probably hold maybe 5 to 10. But I think, look, the rest of them are still going to be bulk. A bulk card is still a bulk card. If nobody wants the card to play with, like, why is it worth anything? You're going to have a couple of people right off the bat who are like, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get one of each because that'll be cool to have. That's what these sales are right now.
Yeah, I actually feel real bad that we had a bunch left over in the store, so I just opened them all up. And I was like, these packs are dumb. I opened 4 commons, a land, what the hell am I doing? And I probably just threw them away or threw them in the box with all the regular ones. Except the reality shifts. I'm pretty sure I sold those to somebody for like $1 each. So I guess I got blown out.
Hey, well, I mean, you can't expect this. Who knew that they were going to be? I mean, Mystic of the Hidden Way that you were talking shit. I got to call you out. You said that wasn't even good in Limited.
I did. It's real good in Limited.
No, you just said it's not even playable in Limited. I listened to the cast when I was editing it.
Corbin's not going to listen to the cast to defend himself.
I was like, how did this pass? We didn't say nothing about it. It's like, this card's not.
I don't believe you. That card is very good in Limited.
You said this card's literally. I went through the edit. Everyone can listen to last week. You literally said this card's not even playable in Limited.
Well, I just had a Marcel moment and used the wrong words.
All right, cool. I'm glad we got that. But that's 350. So that's like,
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. Oh, I had a Marcel moment.
It's acceptable then.
The debate goes straight for the ad hominem attack. I love
it. Well, he sounds so confident. It doesn't sound like an argument I'm going to win. And Ryan's right. I won't go listen to find out. So
you weren't even right about who said that. That was me.
Yeah, I didn't even say that.
Hey, the listeners are going to snitch on you. They're going to let you know.
Oh, geez, back on that already.
Anyway, yeah. So yeah, I mean, the expensive ones will be expensive, but it's going to be very dominated by like those reality shifts and obviously the Ugin and maybe even the wild call if that ends up being played. But all the commons are just going to, they may be $1 or $2 retail, but they're going to be very low liquidity. Nobody's really going to want them.
Well, another picking your jaw off the ground type of moment also happened on Twitter. I came across someone that posted a video where they opened a booster box with all fetch lands in the land slot. Now, I mean, what do you guys think about this? Do you think the video is valid? Do you think this is fake stage?
Because it didn't look that because of the new randomization process, it can absolutely happen. There is like, you know, a 1 in infinite chance, but I mean, it's real. I have to imagine it's real.
Now that it's real. Store that it was filmed in, one of the videos was Dustin Ochoa's shop, Amazing MTG or whatever, in the American Southwest. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's his shop. So I can't imagine they want to risk his reputation making something fake and somehow seeding booster packs with fetches just to, get a few YouTube views.
Yeah.
What happened was they had one box like that. They started opening up a second box and noticed that, you know, there was a – it seemed like the first bunch of packs had a rare in the land slot, and so they just started opening the packs on camera. It seems legit to me that, like, it's too bad it was a store, you know, that's already doing pretty decent business that got that, and not me with my boxes, but you know what? It's fine.
So here's the real question. Was it a printing error, which is certainly possible?
It sounds like a randomization error.
You don't think it's like the God boxes?
I think they might. What if they did that? What if they really had these God boxes and sent them out?
Well, the God packs were a real thing in Journey into Nyx. Maybe they made some Fetchland boxes.
But, like, it could be. And I just think it's going to screw up the distribution for the rest of the packs, because they printed those separately probably. And then they're like, we'll shuffle these in this slot. Or maybe they printed them. I don't really know how the printing process works.
You don't know. So your speculation
is... Like, it seems like a randomization error. Like, you know, they're supposed to put one of these in this box at this slot every so-and-so number of slots, and then they just screwed it up. I mean, humans do this, right? Like, human error is a real thing.
But I don't think... Human error is not putting these packs together.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the process has to be automated.
Yeah. There's no way this is human. So even then... So. Is the thing to do is to buy these boxes, because you might, even the early print run, because you might get one of these crazy boxes.
It'd have to be the very first print run. Like what we were seeing with, you know, when they had the treasures in the Zendikar packs, you had to get it from that very first run. And even then, your chances were pretty low. Yeah, like it's not something that's going to happen to you. It's worse than buying a lottery ticket.
Yeah, exactly. Don't do it. I mean, if you want to buy a box, you know that you have a lottery ticket chance of getting a bunch of fetch lands, and that'd be awesome, but don't buy more boxes. But I still lean towards it being, like, on purpose at a very small rate by WotC.
I do say that the video is responsible for me cracking 3 of my prize packs from Favorite Forge 2.
That's why I think it's
3 prize packs.
That's why I think it's on purpose. Because
why would you crack more than one? There wasn't a fetch land in the first one.
Well, I played 2 pre-releases, so they had 2 different boxes. So I figured maybe if I pulled one, it'd be one, and I pulled another, it might be from another one. Maybe not, because I won 8 the first one and the 4 the second one. So I figured the third one was solidified, and I could just sleep good at night. But speaking of price of packs, I hear that they're going up, because now that the price of boxes are going up $10 from distributors. Is this correct information that you guys got as well?
I mean, I'm hearing rumblings of that. The boxes this time around, I don't think my store sold for anymore. But I do understand the price total has gone up.
I get boxes at cost, and my price did not go up from the guy who actually deals with the distributor for, you know, the anecdotal evidence that that's worth. I do know that my store raised its prices on the pre-release by like $1, because Wizards raised the cost $1 on the, I guess, the pre-release materials. But that's the only price increase I've heard of.
I hadn't heard that at all.
Okay. Well, I don't know much more, so I'm not going to just base this off of stuff I read on Twitter.
Well, no one's going to tell you, Marcel. You already threatened snitches.
I did not threaten. I'm just saying snitches put themselves in danger.
They give themselves stitches.
Literally, they do. Their mouth is their worst weapon against themselves. How about we move into Finance 101? That'd be a better topic that we could get into. So
we haven't already done Finance 101?
No.
No.
Let's move on.
We've got a good Finance 101 this week, I think.
Ugh.
Ryan doesn't seem to like it.
Well, just tune out for the rest of the episode like you always do.
Oh.
Don't you have some drafting to get
yeah,
in?
Yeah, queue draft. Go ahead and start a queue right now. There's no cube up, is there?
Oh,
or he'd be cubing already.
Legacy cube. It's been
I don't hear clicking, so he's not playing League of Legends.
No, I finally got my whole phone situation thing figured out.
That's great.
Can't hear clicking.
No, I actually want Jason to explain this, because I had never heard, like, the topic we'll be discussing today is something that I kind of knew about in theory, but had never actually heard a name given to it. But it's like a real thing, and I actually learned about it from Jason, so he should explain that.
Yeah, this is from Jason, and you've heard about this on the podcast many a times, and you'll hear about it again many a times, because it happens again and again and again and again and again. So Jason, explain people, how can they not fall into the greater fool theory?
Well, this is not really anything I can claim credit for. It's an old economic, you know, axiom. Basically, the greater fool theory says that when you have a when you have a price that is inflated based on hype and people are behaving irrationally, people are buying in at the higher price, hoping that they'll make more money because someone else irrational will buy at an even higher price. So you're behaving foolishly on the hope that somebody else is an even greater fool than you are, and they're going to buy from you at the higher price. So you see a card that starts out at $2-3 and you think it's on its way to 20. So you buy in at 10, hoping you're going to sell it at 15 or 20, you know, and hope that when the price comes down, you're not going to be stuck with those copies selling for less than you paid. So the greater fool theory, basically it ascribes a name to a behavior where people behave irrationally, hoping that somebody else is even more irrational than they are. And I think what Sigmund Allsfresser on QS has started saying is don't chase. Meaning if you see, you know, a card's already on its way up, you don't know where it's going to stop. And, you know, you don't know if your order's going to get fulfilled. You don't know how much time you're going to have to turn around and sell that. Like, just don't chase prices like that. You really need to be ahead of price spikes now, because information exchange has gotten so efficient and stores have basically started canceling orders with impunity. You're probably not going to benefit. What's likely to happen is you end up holding the bag, the price goes back down, and then you fire sale and try to break even. You know, a lot of those times when you're doing that chasing behavior, if you're not in right at the, you know, right at the very beginning, chances are you're going to be left holding copies nobody wants because the price spiked irrationally.
We've seen a lot of it over the last week, and I think it probably especially in regards to Golgari Grave Troll, because this is generally always what happens when a card is unbanned, is, you know, it spikes really hard. Well, there's a lot of people buying in at $1, sure. But there's also people who are then buying in at $5, $6, and that's what makes it go to 10, even though it's never going to settle there.
Yeah, generally what's going to happen, what we see is typically the price will end up stabilizing somewhere between the pre-spike price and the peak, and oftentimes it's right dead in the middle, and I don't really know why. So if you're buying in the middle hoping to, you know, cash out at the peak, that's not who cashes out at the peak. It's the people that had those cards already. And by the time your order shows up in the mail, the price is already tailing back down. People are undercutting each other. You hear the phrase race to the bottom. That basically means you have 10 people selling on TCG Player and they all have Golgari Grave Troll and they paid $5 for it. You know, the price hit 10, but now it's back on its way to 5. So guy's got his listed for 8. And he's going to hope to get 8 because he still made $3 when he bought at 5. But that's not going to stay there. Someone else is going to sell for $7.75 trying to get their copy sold first. And then when you see that, you're like, well, I better sell mine for $7.50. And then that's how the price goes back down. People are undercutting each other. And if the cards don't sell fast enough for the price to maintain that old price, because if they snap sell at $8, no one's going to list it for $7.50 if they're snap selling at $8. But if they're sticking around for a while and you have time to update your prices, that's how you end up, you know, people undercutting each other. And that's what, you know, race to the bottom means. So...
You don't want to
be in that situation either.
How can people really avoid it? Like, you know, if you want to get in on Grave Troll or with the Pro Tour coming up in a couple of weeks, something you see at the Pro Tour, how do people, you know, do that and profit and know when it's correct and when it's not?
Buy right now, right? Because by the time they hear this episode, what the Pro Tour is going to happen, so they should have bought to this week.
Well, the Pro Tour is not for like 2 weeks.
Oh, 2 weeks. So then they buy when they hear this episode. If you have any cards that you really think that you're going
to
gamble on, buy
you
right now.
You have to bet. You basically have to cast the die before. There were a lot of people saying there's no reason for Grave Troll to be banned. You know what? You think that 2 weeks before the BNR announcement, you buy them, you have your copies, and you're the one listing on TCG Player as people are racing to the peak. You know, you want to be the guy selling those copies as people are fighting over them. You're not going to buy them the day of the banned and restricted announcement when everyone else bought them and hope that A, your order gets fulfilled, and B, you get them in time to flip them. Like it just doesn't happen anymore. It's too quick. You're going to have to buy before the information is verified.
So wait, there's no sure bet in the speculation and trying to anticipate stuff.
Crazy, right?
If it were a sure bet, everybody would do it. And like Magic cards would be untenably expensive.
Yeah. Because
if this were easy and safe money, and that's the sexy money in MTG Finance. That's what people really like to hear about, like that big spec that hits. That's sexy. It's not sexy to say, hey, go buy a collection for, you know, 40% of what you're going to sell it for.
So, or, you know, get in on a casual card that, you know, hey, it might get reprinted and you get blown out. On the other hand, in 2 years, it might be worth 2 to 3 times as much as it is now. People want what hit, you know, immediately, not what's going to happen in 2 years.
So this reminds me of a conversation we had with John Medina maybe 2 years ago, roughly. I think about the same set episode where he was talking about, you know, he's got a card store that he can sell, a way to get out. And the smarter way is to buy cheap, you know, buy basically a buy list and sell them at non-buy lists, and that specking is bad. What is your opinion upon this subject now, 2 years later down the line, given the current, you know,
specking climate? Is still the same thing. It depends on how big you get. Like, I don't need to spec with what I'm doing because I'm moving off cards. It's not necessary, but it's fun. And that's what it is. It's like, it's something that is still within our business, and it's something you can make a lot of money at, but like overall, it's going to balance out, right? You're still going to make like a reasonable amount because you're going to hit on a couple of your specs, but you're also going to have the ones where like seance, where you get to laugh at it a little while later. And you shouldn't be losing money if you're good at it. So I don't think there's any harm in doing it. I don't think you can ever base your business off of doing it. And I don't think any of us ever stated that you could even back then. So
yeah,
it depends on what you're in it for.
Yeah, back then I think we always said you can do both. And I would still agree with that.
But spec for fun, don't spec to eat.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'm just trying to hear you guys. I'm not attacking you guys. Don't
yeah, I mean, well, and you know, we're in a position now where all three of us, you know, run a store, or, you know, at least a collection of buying and selling cards. So we're kind of on both ends of it. But at the same time, if you think something's going to go up, why wait to buy list it, or to have to buy list it from people in a year when you can get them now? You know, and to I guess maybe it's my pick of the week, maybe it's not. We'll see when we get there, if I have another. But Crucible of Fire is a great example. It's a card that was $5. Then it got reprinted in 15, and it plummeted to basically a quarter. But, you know, it works with dragons. It gives all your dragons +3/+3. People love it. It's climbing back up. And that's a card we can all look at and reasonably say, hey, in a year, this is going to continue its trajectory. And if it hits hard, like if it sees any standard play or people kind of get going on it, it could be $2 to $3 now. But if not, it will almost certainly be $2 to $3 in a year or two, because that's where the old one is sitting now, and that's half the price of it before it got reprinted. That's something that's very long term. So why wait to buy list those from people in a year and a half when you have to pay $1.50 for them to sell them at $3 when you can spec on them now, put them away, and then sell them as they could go up?
So what is your percentage of specs compared to your regular buying? What do you guys, each of you guys, do it at?
That's unquantifiable, because it really depends on the month. You know, it really depends
set,
what's going on.
Too.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, I mean, for this set, there was nothing where I was just like, oh, I have to buy this. I mean, obviously, looking back, that was a mistake, because you could have gone, like, you know, there's like a couple of cards that went up. But there was nothing that I saw where I was just like, I have a personal feeling this is going to be worth a lot of money. But at the same time, like Rabble Master, before I even really heard anything about the Pro Tour or anything like that, I was just like, I really like this card, and for long-term value, it's going to be sweet. And then I didn't hear about the Pro Tour rumblings until after I had bought them, which happened to coincide with it. But then I was like, oh, and that makes sense too, I guess. And then, you know, like, that was just happened, I guess. So it just depends. Like, there's some sets where I have two or three, and there's some sets where I have none.
I very rarely spec, which is part of my, you know, as someone who writes about specs, I don't want to ever be accused of pump and dump, which is, for people who don't know, where you buy a bunch of copies of a card and then hype it up and come on the podcast and talk about it and write articles about it and all those things just to move your own copies at a profit. You know, often it's disingenuous if people were to do that. So I generally don't spec because of that. But, you know, the specs I prefer are still those long-term sure ones, not let's watch the Pro Tour, and if this one card gets on camera for a moment, regardless of whether it wins or loses, buy it out.
We don't talk much about our specking activity, and some people might think that's because, like, we aren't confident in our ability to pull it off. But really, just we don't want to talk about it because we don't want to be accused of pumping a card too hard and having a personal financial stake in the card going up. And I used to say, hey, you know, if you don't super believe in it, just trade for it, because then you didn't really lose money. If you paid cash for a card and then traded it out, you got, you know, you got your more than you paid for it already. So when you trade it out for full value and, you know, trade for a spec, it's like you paid the buy list price on it. But I traded every copy of Goblin Rabble Master off the people at the shop at the pre-release. And then as people were opening packs, I picked up every Rabble Master in trade. Nobody wanted them. And later when they were like, you know, $20, everyone was salty at me. Like it was my fault somehow. They're like, oh, I had 4 Rabble Masters and I traded them out for 50 cents a piece to this asshole. So like, even that was a real unpleasant situation. I wasn't responsible for the card going up, but people were mad that they lost the bet and I won the bet, and I didn't want that to happen. So I don't even trade for specs anymore. I don't want to see the person's face when I end up with their copy of the card and the card goes up. So like, honestly, that made me spec less, because a lot of times if I didn't want to spend my own money, I would just trade for it. And even that ended up biting me in the ass. So it can be unpleasant for people in our position sometimes.
Well, the thing about specking is there's always somebody who's like losing out, right? Because that's the whole deal behind it. So there's really like, it's not an absolute winner's kind of game. And that sometimes burns people.
You're taking someone else's money. You don't create money. You're taking somebody else's money. Whether it's potential money for them not having the card around to sell for more later, or actual money. So
that's a really interesting way to look at it. I didn't quite think about that. How can you flip it on the other side of the coin?
If you carefully watch your investments, you shouldn't have anyone stealing from you.
Well, okay. But to be fair, it's never stealing, right?
Well, that's the definition of taking someone's money, right?
I mean,
yeah, fair enough.
I like Jason's analogy a lot better. One person wins the bet and one person loses the bet.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, don't gamble if you can't win.
Because right, that's exactly when you're trading a card for its current price. One person is saying either my needs are such that I want this card at its current price, and I think, you know, it'll be either the same or more later. And the person that trades it off says my needs are such that I don't care about this card, or I think it'll be a lesser value later. And one person wins that bet and one person loses.
Yeah, I mean, so to answer, you know, looping back around to your original question of where we were at with Medina in regards to where we're at now, I mean, honestly, that conversation was 2+ years ago. And even the world of specking has changed since then. Back then, you could watch day one of a Pro Tour, see what card did well, buy him Saturday morning.
You literally could have.
God, and 2 years before that, you could look up the shit Monday morning when people were writing their analysis articles from the weekend. You could wait till Monday and buy specs. It was ridiculous.
And 2 years before that, most of the people in your local shop didn't know what the Pro Tour was.
2 years before that, dinosaurs roamed the earth and literally murdered people in their homes.
Did they murder them for bananas?
I don't know why dinosaurs, they can't talk, Marcel. I don't know what they're.
Why would they want
stupid
bananas?
If that was a reference, I didn't get it.
Yeah, I don't know where that's from.
What, Tassigar got bananas and he went fucking nuts.
Jesus, there's my quote from Marcel for the episode. Tassigar's got bananas and he went nuts. That's it right there. Done. I win the contest.
You haven't seen his art? He's got bananas in his art.
I'm looking at it right now.
That was an artless segue.
Oh, you're right. They do have bananas.
All right, see? You guys are just not as deep as
sure,
I am at this shit.
Sure, you're right. Well,
not only do we not know the art on Tassigar, I don't think any of us anticipated
it. You had enough time to check out the bananas.
This has been a literal meme in Twitter for the whole week talking about the bananas. And you guys don't get this.
I don't follow those kind of people because they asked me to price check and I blocked it.
Look, all I know is I don't understand how the four of us and Conley Woods didn't think this card would be good. I honestly don't know. We were talking about Soul Flayer, right? And how it's like a 2-mana 4/5 or whatever, 4/4.
Yeah.
And this is like a 1-mana 4/5.
Yeah, we were wrong. That's why.
Because Tassigar doesn't pair up with Chromanticore.
Yeah,
well, I think I just looked flashy. I judged it on the ability and not the stats.
Well, yeah, 4/5 is so much more relevant. And
It's the ability, not the
It's also the fact that you can Wrath and then drop this guy, and like that's stupid.
I did say
no one was playing Hooting Mandrills.
I did say it got bought out in Japan, and you guys were like,
I'm pretty sure we laughed at you.
That was known information. I took that into consideration. So I wrote the review of all the stuff on Quiet Speculation, and I gave Tassigar a negative review initially. And then I heard a lot of people say, no, I think you're wrong about this card. So I actually wrote about it a second time and said, you know what? It's like $250 right now. So if you actually think it's a good card, you can bet your own money and buy it right now. I'm personally not, but I think if you think it's that good, I think the $2 buy-in with the amount of people talking about the card is good right now.
Well, I kind of
I said it was bad twice, and then third time on the podcast.
It's legendary. It's kind of like – it kind of looked like it would be an Aetherling role where you run at one or two of them, like given that it's legendary, right? And like Aetherling was never more than $2. So, you know, in retrospect, we may be right on the three-month price of the card. We just were very wrong on the one-week price of the card.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it is.
There
I think long-term
– yeah. Flipping that. We talk people out of doing that. So, yeah, we –
you're not gonna get everything right. See, that's the thing. Yeah. You got all the rares to review, and then some of them may look good, but there's two, like the set review before that. I know in Theros, I saw all these cards I thought were really good, and a lot of them turned out to not do anything, even though they're probably still decent cards. But it's just, you know, you can't get it right, especially in a pre-release. If you had it right, you would be spending all your money on that, and you wouldn't be fucking podcasting, you know.
And if your role is different, if you're not us having to review every card, and you're someone at home listening, you're in a position where you only have to have a good feeling about one card. You know, we can't opt out of reviewing Tasigur because we're not sure about it. But you can opt out of pre-ordering any card that you don't have a strong feeling about. Mm-hmm. And that's why if you feel strongly about it, absolutely bet your money if you have the money to lose.
And this is a lesson. Don't necessarily listen to us.
Well, that's
–
yeah, this goes back whenever – I've been doing set reviews now for like – 3 to 4 years on every single set that comes out, and I have a copy paste section I put at the beginning of every single one that says, do not trust me, I have lots of good calls, but I am wrong plenty of times. I'm telling you what I think. You should take everyone's information into consideration and then make up your own mind. So I mean,
that sounds way too much like we're apologizing for getting Tasigur wrong.
Well, I feel bad actually. Like you know, there's a few like
it'll
cars
happen again.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Half the pro community was wrong about Tasigur.
It's like Rabblemaster. Yeah. It's the same kind of feeling. Like there's a card that you have this like hinkering, you know, like, oh, this might be a really good card, but I don't want to necessarily call it because I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's a good card. And you're like on the fence about it. And then it turns out to be a good card. And you're like, you know, I should have just made that fucking call. But you know, that's just how the game works sometimes. And. Yeah, I know, hinkering.
Jason and I both typed it.
I said it. I was like, "It's gone. The ship has sailed."
In the Skype chat, Jason and I both typed hinkering in the same minute.
Were you trying to say hankering?
Yeah, hankering.
It was hankering and inkling, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, "The ship sailed, so we're going."
Anyways, you know, that said, no excuses. We were all very wrong on Tasigur.
Yes, we are. So admit all that right. We're wrong when we're
so,
wrong.
But if you thought it was a good card and didn't buy any at $2, you weren't actually right either.
All right.
But if you did so, because listening to us and we persuaded you otherwise, then maybe you might learn a lesson in the future.
All right. Let's read an email. We've got a good one here that I think we're going to blame Jason for this card. But this email comes to us from Elizabeth G. She says, hey, Brew Crew, I was wondering if you could talk about Scion of the Ur-Dragon and the recent price increase. Overnight, jumping from about $150 to $750. I can understand where it's coming from as far as the new dragons making it a popular commander and casual card, but why did it happen now instead of when the dragons were first spoiled? I'm curious if there's a Finance 101 lesson to be learned here because it was so obvious. I feel like you guys would have talked about it like with Dragon Speaker Shaman.
Actually, can I take this one? I know.
Absolutely.
It's Jason. The reason being, the casual player, and this is something you really only find if you go to these pre-releases, the casual player, the guy who you show up at the shop and he's like, wow, who is this guy? I've never seen him here before. And he's there with 20 other guys and they seem to, or, you know, but they all kind of have their own little groups. And you're like, wow, this isn't our usual crowd. That person does not look at spoilers. They don't have a clue. And even if they do look at spoilers, they don't look so comprehensively that they like had decided exactly what they're going to play. No, they go to the pre-release, they open their cards, they get a really cool dragon, they see a bunch of other people opening dragons, they go, oh, I've already got a dragon deck, or I've already got a bunch of dragons at home for this or that, and they put this together. It takes them a couple of days or a couple of weeks to get that together. These guys aren't like the competitive standard crowd that goes and buys a whole standard deck so that they're ready day one of it starting. So it's just the crowd dealing with.
Yeah, it's definitely the commander crowd. And it's kind of like, yeah, they start spoiling dragons, but they spoil dragons every set. It maybe wasn't until people realized, until you get the full spoiler and you see how many dragons there are, and that even the uncommon ones are good, and all, you know, and the dragon land, and it's like, you know what, I really want to start getting this deck together. So then they start putting their deck lists together, and they start making cuts and additions, looking through all the old spoilers, and that takes several days. It takes time. And then they go buy all of them at once, and that's when your Scion jumps. It's not people are like, I'm going to make this deck eventually. I'm buying a Scion today. They wait until they have their full list, and then they buy.
EDH players buying copies for personal use make the price go up slowly. People speculating on a card because, as you said, it was obvious. Like, we can't make every single card or pick of the week. I felt a lot more strongly about Uvar Hellkite than I did Scion of the Ear Dragon, because that's something that, you know, the price is going to go up as people buy one copy at a time. I didn't feel as strongly about it, so I wasn't going to bet my money. Someone bet their money. That's why it went up so quickly. Somebody bought a lot of copies. So you're right, it was obvious, but there was buying behavior here, and its current price is not its final price. I think it's going to settle lower than it is right now. But somebody bet that if they bought out, you know, TCG player at its current price, they would make money. They're probably right, because Scion of the Ear Dragon is going to be a much more popular EDH general based on the new dragons we got.
I wouldn't be surprised to see it stick. I mean, it's at $8 right now. I would not be surprised to see it stick around there. It's from Time Spiral. Like, that's a long time ago.
So what about Sunforge? What about the Jason E. Alt effect?
Sunforger, tiny leaders card.
Well, and I got people saying that card's not even good in tiny leaders. So, like, that, the amount of people playing that hasn't even been flushed out yet. Like, some people are really spiky and they're like, oh, the format's too fast for that card. But every list I saw in my research for writing articles on Gathering Magic, two of which involved Sunforger, there was Alesha, who is the first ever Mardu colored Tiny Leaders general eligible, and Xu Yun, which also would be good in Tiny Leaders. And Xu Yun's very good in a Sunforger deck because you're playing non-creature spells already. So having a Sunforger package with Xu Yun, and who doesn't want a +4/+0 on a double strike?
Yeah. So what's the Jason E. Alt factor? What happened? So the card went from $10 to $35.
In foil.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Jason was blamed for it, I believe.
Yes. And then it went back down to $20 in TCG, where I made purchase.
Well, I mean, in my research, what I was saying was that a lot of people are at least brewing with it in Tiny Leaders. So somebody saw the same thing I did, and they said, you know what, I'm betting my money that this is a good card in Tiny Leaders based on, admittedly, it could all be people that haven't really played much Tiny Leaders, but it's a new format, so that's going to happen. So when a lot of people are talking about a card, you listen. So I think somebody just bet their money. That's
all right. So I'll ask you this, Jason. The foil price is $23 right now. The non-foil is $1.50. Which of those is incorrect?
I really...
I am putting you very on the spot.
Very
much.
I don't think either one's incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, like, you'd have to buy a lot of copies.
You don't think the 20x multiplier is very wrong, even in Commander?
It's only wrong if it is a card that is useful outside of that format. And or, like, Sunforger is not a card that you're going to want a ton. Like, it's old enough where the foils are hard to find. Yes. It is not old enough where regular copies are that hard to find. I get them in bulk constantly. It is the... It just means that the, like, Tiny Leaders probably being accepted and picked up by the more spiky crowd, who is the crowd that's more willing to foil out their decks, and, you know, just have this pimp-looking Tiny Leaders deck. That's probably what it is. Like, I don't know that either price is wrong for now. I would say that the foil is more likely to drop ever so slightly if it's actually a correctional price. However, there's also the chance that the regular one goes up just because people say, oh, I think it's too cheap, and so they decide they should buy it out. So really, like, you could have the finance market who actually just influences it incorrectly, and then we're going to look at it down the road and say, oh, well, you know.
Because I understand what you're saying, but I don't think
how hard is it to buy all the foil Sunforgers on TCG Player?
One of them has to
be wrong. There were
probably
12 copies, and someone bought them for $5 each.
No, it doesn't
have to. Name one other card where there's a 23x multiplier for a
high market. Any old foil, like, you're Corbin, don't start down that road. There's plenty of foils. You're wrong.
You're comparing Morcadian Masks to Time Spiral.
Yes.
Okay, well, Ryan, it's an 8x multiplier on High Market.
Masks that's is only because closer it just to got Time reprinted. Spiral than it is no, to Kanzatark here.
Okay, and it's an 8x multiplier, not 23.
That's only because it got reprinted, the High Market.
You're the one who named it, not me, right?
Hey, but Corbin, I'm just saying, one thing I've known when trying to do the cube, I don't have many foil cards, but I did get a foil Master of Impedience, and the watermark on the gills looks amazing in foil. Like, it literally says the foil. I hate modern foils, but I will buy any Ravnica modern foil without a doubt just because of the watermark. So that could be a reason why the Ravnica block cards may go up in value somewhat. You know, people know that it's a foil, and then because it is an older set, that it's going to be a lot more restricted. If it's going to be used in Tiny Leaders and EDH or anything like that, that foil, you'll see that multiplier quite a bit. What about like Treasure Cruise, you know? I mean, even though Treasure Cruise is now going to be banned, it's still probably going to be like a $20
foil. Also can't compare commons to rares. I mean, I think we know that, but I'm just asking because, and the reason like I even bring it up to talk about it at all is because I want to know if we think that the foil price is way too high or if we think the non-foil is going to follow it, because I literally don't think we could name that's fine if that's what you guys think. I literally don't think we can name another card that has a 23x multiplier and say that it's going to be like that, because I don't think there's any other card from the last 10 years like that. But
it's
that's
based
fine,
on
so.
Uncertainty, though, because it wasn't me calling it on the podcast, because the price had already gone up by the time in between us recording the podcast and you know, the episode going out. What happened was four days before the podcast, I sent out that tweet that got a bunch of retweets from finance people saying, if Tiny Leaders sticks around as a format and is a real thing, I think Sunforger's price will be tied to the success of the format based on what I saw of, you know, people brewing with it a lot. So Tiny Leader still hasn't really established to what extent it's going to affect prices. So a 23x multiplier is wrong, but we don't know which way it's going to correct, because we don't know A, whether Tiny Leaders is going to be adopted. We don't know B, to what extent Tiny Leaders getting adopted will affect prices. And we don't know C, whether Sunforger is even all that as good in Tiny Leaders as my initial.
Right. And that's
led me to think. So there's so much we don't know.
That's what I was trying to get your opinion on, was if you think that the non-foil, you know, if you think the non-foil is a good buy because we're seeing the foil move so much farther first.
It's so good in EDH, and with the new white EDH deck giving us a general that tutors for equipment, people want to play that in Jor Kadeen, people that want to play that in any red-white equipment-based deck where you've got Stonehewer Giant, Stoneforge Mystic, ways to tutor up equipment, and then the equipment tutors up removal spells, like Wing Shards and Swords to Plowshares and, you know, Boros Charm and all kind of crap like that. Like, it's amazing. So I think the price will go up in non-foil just because Sunforger is so good in non-Tidy Leaders EDH.
The price may go up long term. There's no doubt about that. But that's just because, like, the price has been going up anyway. If you actually look at Sunforge over the past 2 years, it has increased in price, even though it's $1.50 now. It's technically out of bulk range comparatively to a lot of other rares. However, that doesn't mean that the price itself is directly tied to that foil. What it really is the number of formats it's getting played in. All Tiny Leaders does is say, okay, we're introducing a new format. This new format now allows cards to go even higher percentage-wise because you have two things that you need it for. It's the same reason that legacy foils and vintage foils are so expensive, because usually when they're playable in one of those formats, they're playable in multiple formats. Same reason a lot of really good modern cards are so expensive. Like, the more places you add for these cards to be viable and for people to pimp out these decks, the more you're going to see that huge discrepancy between the pricing.
And another format as another excuse for a guy that already has a foil Sunforger in his Jor Kadeen deck to go buy one for his Alesha, you know, Tiny Leaders deck.
So have you played Tiny Leaders? Is this really a format that's going to take off, or is this hype?
I think I'm playing it wrong, because everyone's like, oh, it's Legacy Light, and I'm playing it like a sort of quick EDH, and I may just, like, get smashed by people that have been playing it for, you know, it's been around for a year or two, you know. So I may be playing it wrong, but from what I've played, it's fine. It's what I like about it is it's quick. So you could play it between rounds. You can't play EDH between rounds. This is just a heads up, smash cards together, you know, quick way to it preserves the EDH rules, and it introduces people that don't like EDH to the EDH rule set, but it doesn't have the things that people don't like EDH don't like about it. So I think it could take off.
The fact that I want to play Tiny Leaders and I loathe, absolutely loathe EDH, I would totally get behind that. So I mean I still haven't played a game. So, you know, I want to play a game, and I don't even know if I'm going to build a deck, but something about it sounds appealing. So we'll get on. So let's move on to the next cards, or the next talk. We got Modern going on? Or
what's Ryan, you wanted to talk about Modern, yeah?
Are we going to actually have time for that? Like,
yeah, absolutely. Let's get in.
Well, we haven't even done Pick of the Week yet.
We have cuts. Let's not do a Pick of the Week. We have to do a Pick of the Week. We all missed Pick of the Week.
Talk about Modern, Ryan.
No one's going to want to hear what I actually have to say.
You were excited to say it. I want to hear it.
Hey, so...
Do you want to hear about Seance?
I'll move on. So moving...
Fuck yeah, dude.
Moving on from this beautiful topic, I'm going to be saying that I am actually glad that I was able to pick up a playset of Scalding Tarns from a listener. I'm sorry I can't find his name right now, but he actually sold them to me and told me he listened to the podcast so I could play some Blue-Red Delver. Because I had to get in some Treasure Cruise before it went away, and I'm glad that I did, because Treasure Cruise is busted. I came to the conclusion that it should be banned in Modern, and you guys can send me all royalty payments for coming up with this original statement.
Deep.
Yeah, but I was able to do a 3-1 and two different dailies. I played only two dailies with the deck, and I had 3-1 both of them. So, yeah, I got to have my fun with Treasure Cruise, so I want to say thank you. Treasure Cruise, Delver, you're a beautiful deck, and it's sad to see you go, but Modern can't have you around. You're just too busted.
Or Legacy, as it turns out.
Yeah. All right, you said the word ban, or you said the word daily. There was the Twitter thing and the Venser and Seance deck. I got to mention it for half a second. I won't go into detail, but I got some hopes again.
Shout out to Time Elemental, JR. JR pointed this out, and he sent it in.
Yep. There was a Seance... Vincer the Sojourner, and all your birthing pod creatures in a deck, and a 3-1 to daily. So the other thing that happened last week was Standard.
Talk about the deck. Hold up. I got to hear about the deck. Ryan, talk about the deck. Come on now.
I mean, he covered it all. It's birthing pod shell with, like, you using Seance and Vencer, if I remember correctly. I didn't even really look at it, honestly. I was like, oh, Seance, cool. I mean, at 3-1, like, that doesn't really mean a ton, but I mean, it's cool to see people brewing with the card. I really do think it is actually Modern playable. I don't know that it's Modern playable exactly at this moment, but I think there will be a point in Modern when there is something that will combo with it.
Is this I saw a Reddit post, and I don't know if this is the same deck. The Reddit post I saw, the guy was running Vitugazi Guildmage, and everybody in the Spike subreddit was like, "Ooh, that's a bad card. This can't be good." But he was running like 3 Muldrifters. Is that the version you saw?
Yeah, it's the same version.
Okay, so like,
but
I
have seen other.
The same guy was playing in the dailies. The guy said he did really well at Modern FNM with it, but yeah. I didn't really like the deck as much as I wanted to.
I have seen other people running around with other lists too. Like, there was a cute Sundial of the Infinite Seance deck for a while, but like, it's just, I don't know. I don't know that, like I said, I don't think the piece that we need in order to make that deck like extremely viable is there right now, and it's mostly just grasping at straws.
There's a lot of graveyard hate. So it's basically like the shell from the birthing pod decks, but you expose yourself to additional liability of being weak to graveyard hate. That's what
also the ability to not tutor anything.
Correct. Like you get, but that's why Muldrifter is such a beast in a Seance deck. Like Muldrifter and Seance is just nutty.
Yeah, that's just yes. It is. It's also very very slow.
That is an issue.
All right, let's talk Standard then. We had a Star City Open last week. We had new decks. There was actually a pretty cool Sultai deck that won the event, which is, you know, now the advent. It took a while, and we'd finally have the Delve cards, Treasure Cruise, and Dig Through Time taking over Standard.
And Ugin in multiple top 16 decks. What's up with that?
Ugin's sweet. And especially in your Team or Ascendancy deck, where you can make infinite mana, because that's just awesome.
How's the infinite mana work? I didn't see that.
Okay, so Teemer Ascendancy is not in the deck initially like I thought for the card draw trigger. It's to give creatures haste. So the two creatures you're going to want to give haste are Karametra's Acolyte and Voyaging Satyr. So with Voyaging Satyr, you can untap a Nykthos and so you get mana equal to your devotion to green, or Karametra's Acolyte, which you just have mana equal to your devotion to green as well. So you're either picking them back up with Temur Sabertooth, which says for a colorless and a green, put a creature back in your hand. So if you have seven devotion to green, you pay two to pick up the creature, the Karametra's Acolyte or the Voyaging Satyr, then you replay it, and you net a mana replaying and bouncing. Or you can use, if you have seven devotion as well, you can use Temple Bell thing. What is it?
Singing Bell.
Singing Bell, yeah. Whatever that card is, that says the creature doesn't untap unless you pay six mana.
Yeah, it's Singing Bell Strike is the name of it.
Singing Bell Strike, correct. You pay six mana to untap either the Acolyte or the Satyr, and then you net a mana each time. With the infinite mana, you play... you can, like, just keep bouncing a second Temur Sabertooth and playing it to get the card draw triggers on Temur Ascendancy. Or you can, if you have it, play Genesis Hydra for your whole deck and get your one of Nylea. And Nylea gives, all your creatures have haste from the Temur Ascendancy. And Nylea gives you a way to pump a creature.
And trample.
You know, it gives the other creatures trample. Like, something's going over the top.
And I think there were, like, there was like Crater's Claws. I don't know if it was in one of the lists, but I heard people talking about Crater's Claws, and it's another thing to do once you have infinite mana.
Also, you can just fight their whole board.
That is cool. I seen the deck, and I had no idea there's an infinite combo in there. And this is, I'm very happy. Now there's two combo decks in Standard.
Yeah, I think that's sweet.
That's amazing.
So, do you guys think that? I heard some people say, "Oh, this deck's cute. It's not very good." Blah blah blah. What do you guys think?
It seems less resilient than Jeskai Ascendancy because you don't get as much card draw. You do get, if you have the Ascendancy out, you get the card draw triggers, but the problem is that's the key card of the deck, and that's the only way to draw extra cards. So you, like, in order to find your combo pieces, you need to have your most important combo piece. Whereas in the Jeskai decks, you're doing a bunch of card draw.
But I think it's like Pod, where you may not be able to draw Pod, and you can still beat the person's face in with just your creatures.
Yeah, I would say that this is the first iteration of the deck. If you look at the Jeskai deck, it has to play some awkward cards, like whatever artifact it wins with, or like the Retraction Helix, or whatever. It has to play some awkward cards. I feel like once this deck goes through some iterations, you're actually just going to have a base green devotion deck that can beat down and play well, that also has the ability to combo off.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly where I was going to go with that too. And the point behind that is the mono green deck attacks a lot of the decks that the combo decks has a tough time against. And so you're really like, that's when your combos get scary, is like, that's why the Jeskai Ascendancy and what that eventually turned into the Jeskai aggro deck was scary, because it could crush you all of a sudden out of nowhere as a combo deck, but it also had the potential to just be like turn one guy, turn two guy, turn three guy, pump it with Dragon's Mantle or whatever, kill you on turn five. And so this deck approaches it from a different angle, but still has multiple angles it can attack from, which is really always key with any kind of combo.
Especially post board. If you wanted to play a mono green devotion deck, you could just straight board right into that, bring in some Hornet Queens and some other stuff like that. So a transformational sideboard strategy as well.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see, a final more competitive version of it run that stuff main deck. Like, I feel like, this is when we first saw the Jeskai Ascendancy decks at the Pro Tour in Honolulu, they were iffy, they weren't super consistent, but look at what they became. Like, once people, got enough practice and testing and iterated the deck, this is the same thing. Like, Genesis Hydra is a good card. I mean, like, making mana is a good thing to do. Like, Nykthos is very powerful. Like, this deck, once it goes through some builds and some, practice and some trimming, I feel like you're going to have a very resilient deck that, by the way, can also combo you.
So, I mean, this asks the question that I asked last week. I mean, is it just a good time to buy into Nykthos? I mean, you only have a few.
Don't be taking my pick of the week.
Oh, that can't be your pick of the week, too. All right, then we don't even need to do
pick. I tweeted
of the week.
Last week that it had a 2% spread.
We've all been talking about it for a month.
It hits 2% spread. Like, now's absolutely the second to buy in. So you're saying, I don't know.
Yeah. Whatever. I've been writing about it for a month.
What everyone's about foils?
Oh, I've been writing about it for 2 months.
That's the whole point, Jason. Everyone's been on it.
Yeah. So, like, who's going to call anything? Like, this is beer.
Fucking, it's fine. Let's just wrap up the fucking.
No. Oh, my God.
Fuck you. Fuck you all.
Jason E. Salt. Jason E. Salt. Real face.
This is why people don't think we fucking get along because of this kind of horse shit. Fuck you guys.
So Nick Dose is now $2 in paper. It's $3 in paper, or it's $1 in line. What about the foil copies? Do you think at $13.50, do you think a good time to buy foil copies now before rotation? Or do you think it's just going to go up at rotation? Because do you think this is a card that's going to get reprinted? Is this a card that is so powerful in what it does that there's very few lands that accomplish what Nick Dose does, that this is that type of card you want to get in foil? Like, what do you guys feel about this?
But like, after it rotates out of standard, the formats that are going to want it are, you know, maybe one deck in modern, but mostly EDH. So I think EDH foils are safer. And if they wanted to put it in like a supplementary product, like I actually thought Nykthos was going to be in Commander 2014 because they were doing monocolored, kind of like they did with Command Tower in the multicolored ones. I kind of thought it was conceivable that Nykthos would be in there. You know, they're not going to reprint Cabal Coffers again, but that would be a way to kind of do something like that. So if they did jam it in Commander 2015 or something like that, they're not going to do a foil. So I think the foils are safer from reprint, and that's what you have to worry about going forward.
Yeah, I like foils more than the regular, but honestly, I like both. I mean, it's at an all-time low right now at $3, and it still sees some play in standard. You know, we could see this Ascendancy deck may bring it back a little more, but either way, if it goes cheaper than $3, it's not going to go much cheaper. So now is, you know, I'd say that the probability of it rising a dollar or more likely than it dropping a dollar over the next 6 months. So may as well get in now.
This is also something, too. This is one of those cards that I really like to target, not because, you know, it's necessarily like it's very obvious, like we've all got that. But at the same time, you're looking at the long term. This card is going to be, I mean, it might not be Cabal Coffers price, but that card's an uncommon, already very expensive. Now, a rare, you know, 5 years down the road or even 2 years down the road, this is probably going to at least be a $3 to $5 card for the rest of its life. I can't really see this card once it rotates. It might drop down to a dollar for a short while, but the demand is not going away. Like, there are people wanting to play this in Modern. There are people wanting to play this in Commander, and this may see some Legacy play down the road. You never know.
Didn't you lose to a deck that was playing this in the Modern queues?
No. No. He just had Forests. I don't want to talk about it.
He didn't even have his Nykthos.
He didn't have Nykthos. He was just running straight basic Forests.
You don't even know the deck. It's Green Machine. Shout out to Maddie Studios.
I don't want to know that deck. Mono green. I remember playing mono green when I was 7.
That's SVU.
No, it's sad because outside of the Temur Ascendancy deck, mono green is one of the things I'm looking at for standard because it's one of the quickest way to cast Ugin. So I guess I can't talk too much.
Ugin's sweet, right? Like,
right. That makes up for the fact that I'm playing mono green.
Well, yeah,
but
we still have
to play it next to things like Genesis Hydra and Pelucranos. Like,
I do think that the format can kind of go two ways. Like right now, you've got honestly a bunch of like slowish, grindy decks. Like with the Delve decks, you've got, you know, your Go Big Hornet Queen type decks, and then you have some more aggressive type stuff. But like right now, casting Ugin is very strong, and I think that it will continue to be. At some point, you know, your red decks may come back, or something may come to kind of knock those decks off of their perch, but they actually play very defensive even while they're ramping. So I think Ugin is going to stay, and I don't really, it's like $30 right now, I don't really see it dropping below 20 for the next month or so.
Yeah. It's so much better than I thought it was. Tazagir is so much better than I thought it was. There's so many cards of the set. They're so much better.
Well, the thing with Ugin was everyone was like, well, is this better than Khan in Modern? And what we weren't really thinking about is like, it's the best thing to cast in Standard for that kind of mana. So, you know, what is the impact of Standard? I think this price is going to end up between 20 and 30 based on the fact that being in M15 made Nissa be able to maintain an absurd $40 for a long time, irrespective of its actual playability, and the fact that this is going to be opened more than M15, but less than Khan's Tarkir, like as a set. So I think the supply is going to dictate that to quite an extent. And being colorless and not tied to a color the way Nissa was is going to have put upward pressure on its price too. So I think it'll probably be closer to 30 than 20.
I just hope it gets cheap at some point.
Like Karn did?
I just hope it gets cheap at some point like Karn did so we can get in and get in for the long term. I mean, it's always going to be a colorless planeswalker that can go any deck, and that's how Karn went from $10 to $40. Like, it's just, it seemed obvious then, we didn't do it. It seems obvious now, and I'm not going to miss the chances if it actually drops.
So Garrick Apex Predator is actually a pretty good card to hunt Ugin's, because Ugin has no real way of dealing with the card. So I think you may get some movement on that card a little bit.
A giant uncastable planeswalker battle?
Hey, this is
a teamer combo deck? Like, what is Standard turned into?
This is the best thing ever. Like, last year, I was not playing Standard. I completely read off the format because at this point, there was still Mono Blue and Mono Black Devotion. And 6 months later down the line, there was still Mono Blue and Mono Black Devotion. Oh, thank you, Wizards. Thank you. Thank you.
It actually kind of makes me wish that I was able to play FNM more and could actually play Standard, because there are so many things you can do in Standard, and it seems like a lot of fun.
It's a format of choices. You know, there's a lot of cards that are really good in power level and casting costs, and you just have to make decisions on, you know, what do you want to play. And it's a lot better than having to really, you know, am I going to play Sphinx's Revelation or am I going to play a Devotion deck? Man, it's so much better. I decided, whatever. So you guys got something to say, picks of the week? Are we going to do that or no?
I mean, we've covered several already, right? Does anyone have anything they want to throw in?
We probably did five over the course of the episode.
Yeah, I mean, I gave mine away early with Crucible of Fire, so.
I don't have a pick of the week necessarily, but I do have an interesting one, and I'm curious about this. We were, it's kind of more of a question to field to you guys, because I'm not even 100% sure. Maybe you guys have heard something I haven't. I was looking through a bunch of Italian Legends cards that came in here pretty recently in a collection, and I was looking up the names primarily, because I just didn't recognize some of the arts, to see what the value was. And I also happened to notice while I was going through pricing that Reset, which had been a $30 card for years, and over the past couple of years had dropped down to almost as low as 10 some places, is suddenly back to $30 and sold out in a lot of places. Anybody know why? Is there some speculation behind this? Or is it like, does it have to do with like Treasure Cruise Dig Through Time and like it's just going to go back down because of the bannings? Or is there something I missed?
I think I've always loved this card. It was going up based on Treasure Cruise stuff.
Okay,
I don't know if it'll go
wondering.
Back down based on the ban. It'll go down slowly maybe.
Because the spiking actually just happened after the banning, I think. It was really like just in the last couple of days. Like I happened to notice like the day it happened. And I didn't know if there was something that I should know and like just missed out on, cause it does happen. Obviously none of us have all of the information.
I don't read enough spiky articles cause we missed the whole thing with Survival of the Fittest. Apparently that was being touted by some pros as
fair.
I don't know. So
yeah, I mean, it's been holding. Now it's, I guess the low is back down to right around 20, but that's also not necessarily. Let's see, what's the lowest near mint copy? I guess is probably more relevant than anything. The lowest near mint, yeah, it's $30. So really, like, you can't really get these cheap anymore. And I'm glad I had been sitting on about six or seven of them that I've picked up over the years and just waiting for them to go back up, I guess. I just didn't know if there was a deck that I was hopefully trying to get in Legacy, really. This is more the player in me asking.
Reset, like, it's so much more annoying than just playing the Candelabra High Tide builds.
Yeah, it's just like that version of it is pretty resilient because you don't actually have to do anything until your opponent tries to kill you or interrupt you, as opposed to the other version that like has to choose a time to go off still.
Having to go off on their turn is kind of annoying, though.
Not really. Everything in your deck's an instant. All you do is just land go, and yeah, a lot of times your opponent doesn't necessarily know what you're doing for the first turn or two. And so if they don't set up correctly, you can kind of put them in these positions where, like, turn four, they didn't, you know, go searching for the proper answers, and you just wreck them. Once you play, like, your third island, people usually kind of, you know, they figure it out, and the jig is up if they've played Legacy before. But it's a really under-the-radar deck. I mean, Solidarity is what I'm talking about, if nobody knows. It was an older combo. I mean, it's been around for, 10 years now. It's very, you know, small amount of people that actually run it. It's similar to Spanish Inquisition in that sense. It's a combo deck that very few people know about. But I would love to see that get played again. I didn't know if there was some new Reset deck.
It could be some person being like, why is Reset so cheap? And if it's that cheap, and there are that few copies. Sometimes that sort of thing happens.
Yeah, it might. And I guess Dig Through Time is still legal, right? So,
yeah, correct. That could actually be a deck that makes use of Dig Through Time but not Treasure Cruise, and that could be what they're speculating on.
Fair. Okay.
But people that do something like that don't always know something other people don't. They could just be guessing.
Yeah, I just didn't know if anyone had seen anything show up, or like I'm waiting for, there's a Legacy opening here coming up, or a Legacy event coming up here soon, so maybe we'll see something then. I would just be super stoked to be playing, seeing people play resets again.
So something I noticed was that Siege Rhino shot up in the foil from 15 to 27, and then it went back down to 21. The shot up just happened recently, actually, today. And I was considering that because I think Siege Rhino may just be modern playable for quite some time. So foil copies, do you think right now is supply is so high as a good time to get into foil copies? Or should people wait till rotation? Or what do you guys think?
I mean, does this card continue to see even more play with Pod being banned in modern? I think there's another question there.
It seems to, because it fits right into the black-green X decks.
It becomes a 4-of instead of a 2-of.
You have to play it as a 4-of now that you can't do it for it.
Then your answer is probably yes. I mean, it's probably still a little too early to tell. We don't really know how many of these promos actually got out there. And it's not that I don't see them, but I certainly see a lot less of them than I did a couple of months ago, because I think there's a lot of people who get their 4X set and sit on them finally. And until they got their 4X, they probably had them sitting in their binders or whatnot. I don't know. I think a year from now, we'll have a much better gauge on what these new promo system is going to do to the price. But right now, it's kind of the Wild West as far as, you know, the price of these go.
And I mean, we'll see if Siege Rhino stays relevant. I can't imagine it not being. I imagine that Black Green X decks, probably with white, are going to be just huge at the Pro Tour, and there'll be lots of.
They're nuts. I played against them, and they are fucking disgusting.
Like Confidant into Liliana into Siege Rhino, or like throw Lingering Souls in there. Like, it's all just insane.
Confidant's not a good card in that deck, but yeah, you got Lingering Souls, you got Liliana.
It depends on your. Yeah, it depends on what you're leaning. But
now you could even run Tassigar in the deck if you want to.
Oh, man.
Those decks are going to be extremely powerful.
Yeah, I would not be surprised to see those even more.
I have to imagine those decks are going to be the front runner at the Pro Tour.
You know, yeah. You'll see Siege Rhino on the top 8. I'll put money on that.
Oh yeah. Well, the thing is, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's actually going to be really interesting if Black Green X becomes kind of the new boogeyman in a sense. Because if you think about when Jund had Bloodbraid Elf and it was just clearly the best deck, blah, blah, blah. It did have some bad matchups, mostly Burn and other, you know, really aggressive decks, but really a lot of Burn because it dealt itself so much damage. Well, now that weakness has been completely removed because they have better fetch lands so they can play more basics, and they have Siege Rhino to make stuff like that even more difficult to get at them. So I'm curious to see what the bad matchup for that deck is, or if you're just going to have a bunch of Liliana mirrors at the Pro Tour.
I think you're going to see some Storm.
I think it is a little soft to combo.
It's still Burn also. Like, Burn runs 4 Skullcracks main deck for that reason.
Now, I was getting a lot of people mad because people were trying to play like decks in the tournament practice room, and I was just playing the Delver deck, and they felt it was unfair.
They were trying to get ready for the banning, and Marcel's like, "I'm enjoying this."
I was getting ready for the dailies. What are you talking about? I was testing, right. You know, 3-1. I made money on those dailies. I paid for my cards that Absolutely. I rented for the time being. But you seen that? I seen Tron though. Tron was trying to definitely make a comeback. I've seen quite a few different Tron decks.
Yeah, there's like a green, then there's blue green, then there's like the red green. I saw a bunch of Tron while I've been testing as well.
I really hate that Tron is poised to become a pillar of the format.
I'm really happy about it.
Might make people that weren't inclined to play Tron.
I just think that Tron's a little unhealthy.
I haven't seen anybody
cast
an Ugin yet. Most people are still. Oh, I guess I can't on mine. Never mind.
I mean,
I think Tron is.
Got another week for that.
I think it's good if we have that counter or whatever to the Black Green X decks, but I don't consider Tron a particularly healthy deck.
Well, I mean, he's got to have aggressive. I mean, I push Tron shit in, you know. Like,
yeah, Tron's
nothing.
Not an issue for like a lot of decks.
You got Affinity.
Right,
Affinity will do
it.
You know?
Right. The question is, how's Affinity's matchup against the Black Green X decks? Like, probably not great. You know, it's just all kind of how it'll work out. But I'm pretty sure that, you know, your Black Green X has to be the top. And then that means you'll probably see plenty of Tron because it has a good matchup against those decks. And, you know, that's, we'll see where it goes from there. But that and the blue, white, red decks as well. It's just going to be really interesting to see where it all goes out. But I think the Siege Rhino decks are sitting at the top of that curve right now.
Well, good thing we don't know. Well, we're not real
let's
players.
Let's not get ourselves too deep into Modern. I imagine we'll want to do a little more of that next week. So it's probably about the time to wrap it up, eh?
Well, in the meantime, I got to give Jason his due credit. He is owed Fogo because High Sendel's Ashran.
A ration.
A ration. Okay, right on, correct. Is 26 cents. This is below bowl.
I don't feel good about that.
I feel really good.
I don't feel good taking your money.
What are you talking about? I get to go to Fogo. I went to Fogo when I went to Denver, and now I'm actually looking forward because I found out that I didn't get none of the chimichurri sauce that I could have ordered consistently with all the meats that would have made the meal instantly better. So right now, we are going to Fogo as soon as possible.
Well, you are going to get your money's worth.
That is
true. Because I am going to get the meat sweats.
Oh, man. I can't wait for those meat
I'm not
sweats.
Even going to the salad bar. That's how much value you're going to get out of the Fogo you buy me.
Maddie got to realize the Brazilian Steakhouse if you listen to Last Heavy Meta. And yes, if you haven't gone to the Brazilian Steakhouse, you need to go to the Brazilian Steakhouse, everybody.
You need to stop what you're doing in Fogo there now.
Exactly. And then, there's another shout out I got to give. Shout out to Teespring. Everybody that bought a Teespring t-shirt, you're wondering why you got an email that you're going to be receiving another Teespring t-shirt as an error. Well, what happened was they printed the wrong color. If you look at the Brainstorm Brewery, it has like an orange instead of a brown. You may not notice it. You may notice it. Is actually when I see it, or many other artists or somebody, they'll be able to spot it out, and once you see it, it'll bug you. But talk to Teespring, and they realized that yes, they had the wrong color. They sent me an email saying that they did have the wrong color, and they don't know how that happened, and they're sending everybody a second t-shirt. So I just want to give Teespring a shout out. It turns out they're doing pretty good. They're a pretty good company. They just got $36 million in funding through venture capitalism. So they're, you know, if you like doing t-shirts and you want to have a t-shirt idea, I can definitely say Teespring has done well and their customer service, you know, treats you right. So shout out for them.
We'd make a lot more money not going through Teespring for our t-shirt campaigns.
We would, but the headache would be just infinitely larger, like not even worth the additional money you would make.
Exactly. So that's why we do it. The convenience you get, if you just want to have, you know, a medium-sized order, like, right, 50 of my fans are going to want a shirt, and I don't want to order, you know, and try to anticipate what sizes they got. It's convenient. This sounds like they're paying us if we say any more nice stuff about
I know.
Them, but
let's leave it
I'm
alone.
Just so happy if I'm getting a free t-shirt when I was yeah, totally I
get,
happy with the first
I'm
one.
I'm so stoked that I waited this time on accident to get a hoodie, because that means I get two hoodies.
Free hoodies.
Are we getting another hoodie?
Yeah, you're getting everyone that bought whatever you bought, you're going to get a brand new, because the printing was wrong. It was incorrect. Like, it may not seem like a big deal to everyone, but it, honestly, like, when you get into this type of thing, the fine details with colors, like, it's orange. It's not brown. When you get into, you know, really logos and, like, corporate stuff, that difference in colors make all the difference. And if you're going to advertise that you're going to provide a certain type of quality of a product, you got to deliver on that. And that's all they did. You know, they're delivering on their promise. It's not going to happen again. We're going to talk to them in the future, so. You know, buy your t-shirt. We'll have another campaign sometime in the future, probably near the tail end of February or something. So if you're ready to get into a Brainstorm Brewery gear, you know, we'll have that ready. And if you have any ideas as far as how you would like us to use our logo in a different way than we already have, you know, let us know. And, you know, we'll be able to accommodate you.
We're doing it again so soon, so because we wanted to get zip-up hoodies to people.
Yeah, we just found out they did have zip-up hoodies in there.
Yeah, there's so many people excited about that. Like, I've talked to at least three different people just locally here who are buying it just for a zip-up hoodie.
So I think we may do the Shut Up Corbin t-shirt also.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's going to happen.
Get excited about Teespring.
So if you guys don't know, like, this was near the beginning of the podcast, like episode 20, when we were going to go to Gen Con. We were like, we're going to do the first initial Brainstorm Brewery t-shirt campaign through Teespring. And we were like, all right, we're going to have a regular Brainstorm Brewery, and then we're going to have a Shut Up Corbin. And the Shut Up Corbin, I think it got like 15 or 16 of 20. So it almost fired, but it didn't quite do it. And I think it was because we had a dual campaign.
When was this? How long ago was this?
Episode 20.
This was like when we very first started. That could also be part of the reason it didn't sell, because we had like four fans.
Yeah. So
they each bought four shirts.
Exactly.
Well, now we have two fans.
Well, they're going to buy 20 shirts each. So we're going to break this. We're going to do a Shut Up Corbin, this next one, as a test. 2 years later, it's probably longer than that, right? That's 2.5 years later. And we're going to do a Shut Up Corbin. Guys, so if you guys
so excited.
And if you guys don't know what Shut Up Corbin means, because we haven't used it in quite a while. So if you're a new fan. You're not an OG fan, you got to listen back. Shut Up Corbin is the meme. Corbin has so many memes, but Shut Up Corbin is probably.
Episode 100. Listen to it. Love it.
Yeah, listen to episode 100. Catch up on your Brainstorm Brewery. Get your shoes laced. Get back on the court. Shoot some layups.
Just don't fall asleep like I did.
I think I'll link episode 100 in the show notes for your convenience.
That seems fine. I listen to it like every other month because it's hilarious.
Yeah. Let's wait till episode 200. I'm already looking
forward. Marcel's got it plotted. Well, what? We're a third of the way there now almost.
Well, you have to count for 199.1, 199.5.
We're going to be ready for it this time.
Hold up. Yeah, well, while we mention it, we're still going. All right. A call to action. Anybody, I need your favorite clips from Brainstorm Brewery. Send it to me now.
Starting early.
We're 30 episodes in.
We are over a year early.
Yes, but if I could knock out some clips now and just have them on storage, like you don't know how much time. You will have episode 200 with no delay if you can help with that. That's going to be help there, and there'll be some cool prizes. I can't think of something that's enough to incentivize you guys, because I already made a call to action once and it didn't happen at all. But we need to get some people to submit your favorite clips, your favorite moments, so you can make this 200 a great episode. And we don't have to wait a month for the episode to come out, because sometimes, you know, we're going to get the planning going. So if you can, do it. If you love the cast, you know, do it. Shout out to everybody, because everybody's cool. Let's get out of here before somebody else gets a shout out. Brainstorm Brewery, we're out of here.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.